welcome to our podcast, Two Chairs Talking. This is episode 85, and it's our first for 2023. My name is Davey Grigg, and I'm joined by my co-host, Perry Middlemiss. How's the new year been treating you, Perry?
Pretty good, thanks, David. Happy new year to you and our listener. I hope it's been a good one, that you didn't set yourself up too many New Year's resolutions that you've automatically failed to achieve, a bit like me.
No, I don't do that these days.
Well,
there's no point failing.
No, absolutely no point failing. You set yourself up early and you know you've got to fall flat in your face day two. So the only thing to do is to set up a long-term plan, David, which we might actually chat about a bit more later in this episode on the basis when we start talking about our best books of 2022. And we look back and we can sort of have a little bit forward, look forward as well. But generally, my new year hasn't been too bad at all so far. The weather's warming up. We've had a few hot days, but we haven't had any absolute and utter scorches, which is a good thing. And it's hovering around about sort of a warmish summer without being too hot, which is, for a poor old bugger my age, it's a good thing to have.
Yeah, well, we don't have any air conditioning as such. We've got sort of evaporative cooling, which sort of works, but not brilliantly. It sort of lowers the temperature by a few degrees, but that's about as much as you can say for it. So if we hit those 40-degree days, it's going to be a pain.
Well, just got to get the fans out and
The fans out. Yeah.
Fill the bath with water and lie in the bath and read a book.
Well, that would be useful if we had a bath.
Oh, okay. See, poor planning. Very poor planning, David. Anyway, that's the way of it. But anyway, I hope you and yours and everybody else had a good time over the festive season. And
we did, yeah.
Didn't do what I did and ate far too much and cooked far too much and we had far too many leftovers and, God.
We didn't do that. We had lunch at my daughter's place, so any leftovers were her concern, not ours.
Okay. Well, we had it at our place, but we only had a small number and we had certainly had far too much food, cooked too much. So I've resolved next year that one of the main courses is just going to get taken out because it's just too much. Yeah. Anyway, so there we are. So that's that's the way we are. And we're now moving on to good old 2023 and looking forward to another big year in podcasting and a big year in reading and lots of good stuff, David.
Indeed. All right. So do we have any news, general news? I think you have a few items.
Do you have any news for us?
Nothing really. So anything you've got, I'd be happy to hear.
Oh, well, I've got a few things. Remember at the end of last year I was ranting about the Prime Minister's Literary Awards coming in far too late in the year, being announced sometime in mid-December, which didn't give any of the booksellers enough time to get the books out into the shelves for customers to buy for Christmas presents. Well, they were actually announced, and as I said, they were announced fairly late, and they really need to be moved back into, even mid-November would be okay. They'll move it back a month, but not mid-December. You don't need that long. Anyway, so I had my rant last time. I won't go through that again, otherwise it will be here forever, and I'll just get my blood pressure will go through the roof, and we don't want that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so let me just give you the rundown. There's about half a dozen of them. Fiction was won by Red Heaven by Nicholas Rothwell from Text Publishing, our friends at Text. Poetry by Human Looking by Andy Jackson. Non-fiction, Rogue Forces, an explosive insider's account of Australian SF war crimes in Afghanistan by Mark Willacy. Australian History, CEMUT. Hopefully that's how you pronounce it, S-E-M-U-T. The Untold Story of a Secret Australian Operation in World War II, Borneo, by Christine Helliwell. Children's Literature, Mina and the Whole Wide World by Cheryl Clark, illustrated by Brienne Stewart. And Young Adult Literature, The Gaps by Leanne Hall. Do you know that one?
I've heard of that.
Yeah, haven't read it yet. Well, put it on that ever-growing to-be-read list,
absolutely.
David.
Absolutely.
And hopefully it doesn't topple over and crush you at some time during the year, which mine always threatens to do. A couple of other bits of news. One other award piece of information. This is the 2023 Philip K. Dick Award. The finalists for this particular award have been announced. This award is presented annually to a distinguished work of science fiction originally published in paperback form in the United States. And we have the following works on the shortlist. Arboreality by Rebecca Campbell. Widowland by C.J. Carey. Ymir, Y-M-I-R, by Rich Larson. January 15th by Rachel Swirsky. The Legacy of Molly Southbourne by Tade Thompson. And The Extractionists by Kimberly Unger. None of those have I read, but I am aware of some of the authors, but not all of them. And so it's always useful to see new authors appearing on awards shortlists. As best I'm aware, that's the first and the earliest. I mean, crikey, we're only a couple of weeks into January, and the first of the year's awards has already started and gets underway, and they start rolling out now for the next the next 6-8 months. Further news, we have had a death in the genre, unfortunately. Susie McKee Charnas has died. She was born in 1939 and died January the 2nd, 2023. She was best known for her ambitious works that explored gender, sexuality and feminist issues. And she's probably best known for Walk to the End of the World, published in 1974, which continued with Motherlines in 1978, both of which won retrospective Tiptree Awards. They're not called the Tiptree Awards anymore, but they were at the time. So if it was called that at the time, that's what I'm calling it now. And also she won a Tiptree Award for her novel The Conqueror's Child in 1999. She won the Nebula Award in 1981 for her novel Unicorn Tapestry, and she won the Hugo Award in 1990 for a short story, Boobs.
Okay.
There we are. I know that a friend of the podcast, Lucy Sussex, was well acquainted with Charnas' work and was very sorry to hear of her passing. But as we get older, David, as we know, we get more and more of these occurrences happening all the time, and we just got to learn to put up with it. And it's just unfortunate, but we're going to lose a few more during the year, that's for sure. Probably quite a lot, but there we go. So that's the end of my news, David. All done.
Indeed. All right, before we go on to our major topic, I just want to let our listeners know that someone kindly decided to demolish a house over the fence from me to this morning. So if you hear the occasional crash, I'll try to edit it out, but I can't always control these things. So there may be a little bit of noise in the background. That's all I'm trying to say.
All right, so as long as it's somebody else's house and not yours, they're trying to
demolish, that's right.
Well, that will be the major thing.
We're paid up here.
All right, okay, well, so, that's good. So, you know, if they start coming in through the back door and start knocking things down, you can,
we might pause the podcast.
We might have to pause the podcast, and you might have to go out and settle that little problem down and make sure that they don't go any further in. Anyway, so best books of the year, David.
We're going to talk about the best books of 2022. Best books we read, not necessarily the best books published.
Yeah, that's
the best books we read.
That's our. These are our best books.
Which could be quite old books. Yes,
they could be. They could be. So how was your reading year?
I had an excellent year in reading. I read some really crackers, I thought. In fact, so much so that when we get to talking about the best overall, I can't split between like the top six. You know, they're all sort of, you know, the same sort of level. So I'll give them an order, but the order is really almost arbitrary. But we'll get to that when we come to it. No, I had a really good year reading. I read 85 books, which was 5 more than my target on Goodreads.
Good.
On the Goodreads site, you can set yourself a challenge every year, which I do. I'll set myself a challenge of 80 books again this year, and we'll see how I go with that. And that included some quite long books. I had a bit of a look and see the length of the books, and I read, what was it, 18 books longer than 500 pages.
Mm.
So that's not bad going, I
think.
That's
pretty good, I reckon. Yeah. Far better than I did.
How about you then?
Well, I was down this year. I mean, I remember talking about this last year, having been down. I mean, I seem to be noting a drop-off at the moment of the last few years. So I read 119 in 2020, 121, but only 83 in 2022. I did do... I spent 6 weeks travelling and really only read two or three books during that particular time because there was too much else that was going on.
It's you again.
Makes it really tough to keep up with what's going on. But I was down in a couple of other spots, a couple of other months earlier. But I also read some cracker books, and I was impressed with some of the books that I read. I was unimpressed with some that I also read, but that's okay. We're not here to talk about the ones that we're unimpressed with. We're here to talk about our best reading of the year. So I, according to, again, I'm with you and I go on Goodreads, and I would recommend that people do so because I find it to be a very useful website. Yes, there is advertising, but it doesn't come up and punch you in the face. It's there on the side, but it allows you to track all of your reading and also to get recommendations in terms of what to read next. You know, if you've read a particular book, Goodreads will tell you other readers also liked these particular books, and that gives you a bit of an idea about what to look at next. Because while you and I, David, might have very long to-be-read lists, there are a lot of people out there who struggle to work out what book they should read next because maybe they don't keep up with the news as much as we do, and it can be difficult to make a decision as to what to get onto next time. So recommend it as recommend the website, and as you stated, it is possible to set up a reading challenge so that you can keep track of where you are. And then at the end of the year, it gives you a full rundown and survey about what it is that you've read, showing you all the book titles, all the book covers, highlighting the ones that you gave 5 stars to, probably not highlighting the ones you gave 1 or 2 stars to, but that's okay. But it tells you, it gives you a bit of a good feeling about, well, look, I read all of these during the year. I had to hit my targets. I didn't, as I said, read 83 and my target was 100. Basically, we'll just see how we go and keep on doing it each year.
Indeed.
So according to Goodreads in 2022, David, as I said, I read 83 books, 19,150 pages for the year. Sounds like you read a heck of a lot more than I did.
I did. My total, according to Goodreads, is 30,000 words.
Whoa.
Sorry, 30,000 pages.
30,000, you did a lot more.
Goodness knows how many words that is.
No, I don't know. My shortest book was 72 pages and the longest 626.
Yeah,
now, these are spread across lots of different categories, which we shall get to in terms of our Goodreads. We'll come to our best recommendations and what we like during the year as we come across those categories coming up in just a minute. But yeah. I won't go into those at this point. Although I did read 2 graphic novels this year, David, which was a bit of a change for me. And I think that I should basically start reading a few more. There's a lot of them around and, you know, I like them. So I should basically get back into reading those, but there'd be also a lot more that we can discuss about what we read well and what categories we read well in and what we didn't.
Indeed.
Anyway, so do you, shall we move on to our first category then, David?
I think we might as well, yeah.
So science fiction, top of the list.
Okay.
I read 11 novels this year in science fiction, which doesn't seem to be terribly many to me. I seem to have a lot more listed under science fiction, but it seems to be that I'm reading a lot more novellas in that particular category these days, and I've separated novellas off into another category, which I'll discuss later on.
Yeah.
So counting down from 5 down to 1 in terms of my top 5, number 5, Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir, which we discussed with our Hugo's, that was nominated for a Hugo this year.
Okay.
Number four, The Goblin Reservation by Clifford D. Simak, which we covered in our Hugo Time Machine.
Yeah.
At number three, A Desolation Called Peace by Arkady Martin.
Yeah.
That was from 2021 as well. Also, that was the Hugo Award winner. Number two, Stand on Zanzibar by John Brunner, which won the 1969 Hugo Award, and which we discussed this year. And yep. Number one, Cloud Cuckoo Land by Anthony Dower.
Interesting. It's interesting you put it in that category. I guess it does deserve to be in the category.
Yeah, I've put it in that category.
And, I put it in a different category.
That's okay. That's just different strokes for different folks.
Different strokes for different folks. That's very true.
So basically, to me, the Dower and the Brunner novels were the two standouts, I thought. Oddly enough, I gave the same mark rating for The Goblin Reservation as Desolation Called Peace, which I thought... And this is the weird thing about giving these ratings, the way that I do them. I don't necessarily go back and check every single rating I've given for the year to be able to determine where I should give a particular rating for a book. It's just what I think it should receive after I've read it. And it just so happens that I gave them both 4.0. Now, looking back on it now, I could basically say, well, Desolation Called Peace was a much better book than Goblin Reservation. But I liked The Goblin Reservation. And so none of this is objective. It's all subjective.
No, it's completely subjective, of course.
Absolutely. And I'd have no qualms about stating that the ratings that I give are what I give things and what I like, and I try to be a little bit objective about it, but sometimes you just can't. And if you like a book, you're going to give it a higher rating, even if other people don't like it. And that's just the way that it is. Now, I didn't have any honourable mentions in this because after Project Hail Mary, things seem to fall away pretty rapidly. And I really like only giving honourable mentions to books that make... I give a rating of 4.0 or higher to. Mm-hmm. And Hail Mary, number five, came in at 3.8. So no honourable mentions for me. How about you?
It would have been a lot further down. It is a lot further down on my list, I think. Anyway, my list. Now, I might say, though, that my approach is I just give the ratings out of five on Goodreads as I go. And it's only at the end of the year that I then sort of assemble things and sort of give them fractional ratings to see how they move up and down in my list. So we have a slightly different approach, but that's fine.
Okay.
It all works out to the same in the end.
Yep.
All right, so counting up from five, I have The Past is Red by Catherine M. Valente at number five. I thought that was great. It came at the bottom of the Hugo voting, but I still liked it a lot. And I point out that it was a runner-up in the Ursula K. Le Guin prize. So people other than me must think it's okay. I liked it a lot. Anyway, so that's number five. Number four was Light from Uncommon Stars by Rika Aoki, which was on the Hugo nominations list. And I liked it a lot. After that, number three is Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel, which was great. Number two was a book called The High House by Jesse Greengrass, which doesn't seem to have received any attention from anybody. But I thought it was a wonderful sort of elegiac, post-apocalyptic climate change book. It's beautifully written, just really, really lovely prose. Really nice book. And the top of my list was The City and the City by China Mieville, which is the first time I've read it. I thought that was terrific. So that was I do have a couple of honourable mentions. Lord of Light by Roger Zelazny and Stand on Zanzibar by John Brunner. So that's that.
All right. Okay, well, I can tell you that The High House did get a bit of a mention on the Backlist podcast. One of the hosts of that particular podcast was reading it, and they normally talk about what it is they're reading before they go on and talk about the major book that they're there to discuss. And he was extolling the virtues of that particular book. Mm. I know that the Sea of Tranquility, the Emily St. John Mandel, That was published last year, so 22 title, I believe.
So it's eligible next year.
Yes,
this year for the Hugos.
I would think that it is. If I was to sit here right now and to give you, as I do, and give you a bit of a finger in the air to say, what do I think will be on the list? It's probably high on the list. Well, that Mandel Sea of Tranquility seems to be getting enough buzz to be able to say that it will be on the Hugo ballot later this year. So I will be attempting to get to it in the next month or so.
No, you should definitely read it.
Yes, I believe that's probably the best I should get onto. So, all right. Okay, next category, fantasy novels. Well, I did really poorly here. Absolutely. I only read two.
Okay.
And only one of those I liked. And that was She Who Became the Sun by Shelley Parker Chan, which I gave 4.4 out of 5 for. Again, in this particular category, I seem to be reading a heck of a lot of novellas rather than actual novels. And so 10 of the 12 fantasy books I read during the year were novellas. And so there's only this one book, and we discussed that at great length. So
Now, I read that in 2021, So I read it in 2021, so it's not eligible for this year's list, but, yeah, it was one of my top ones the previous year. All right, so for me, for fantasy, I read a fair bit, really. But I've also included novellas in with my novels here, so it gets a bit confusing.
It does a bit.
Okay, so my fantasy list, counting up from five, was Night Watch by Terry Pratchett. That was a reread. It's one of the best of the Discworld novels. I'm very fond of Terry Pratchett. He uses his fantasy world as a means of satire of the real world in a very, very clever way. So I like Night Watch, but it was a reread, and that was number five. Number four was A Spindle Splintered by Alex E. Harrow, which was a novella, I admit. Number three was a collection of short stories called Bliss Montage by Ling Ma. Very strange stories, very strange stuff. Number two was Ithaca by Claire North, which is a retelling of the Odysseus myth from Greek mythology. Very different sort of angle for Claire North to be taking. She normally writes these sort of very strange, well, these thrillers with a very strange concept behind them, but this is quite different. But it's good. It's the first of a trilogy, so I'm looking forward to the next couple in that series. And number one in my fantasy, the very best fantasy I reckon I read, was a book I only just read in December called Babel, or The Necessity of Violence by R.F. Kuang. And I'll have to talk about that at some length, either on the podcast. I'm certainly going to do it in writing. It's a great book. It's all about words and translation and colonialism and about young people sort of trying to find themselves and where their place is in the world. It's a good book. Good book. So I would be very surprised if that's not on the Hugo list this year. It certainly ought to be.
Yeah, that was another one that I was going to say would probably very definitely be on the list. Again, it's another one that I need to read coming up soon. My daughter's recently read it and was raving to me about it and said, oh, do you want me to, she borrowed it from the library, do you want me to keep it out? Do you want me to extend it? And I thought, I'm just not going to fit it in the next couple of weeks because I've got too many other things lined up to read. But as soon as I get a bit of clear space, if I ever get any clear space, I will be aiming to read that one before the Hugo nomination ballot comes out so that I can see whether it needs to be on that particular shortlist. From what you've been saying and what she said, certainly sounds like it should be.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I bought myself a copy, actually. I don't buy physical books often these days, but yeah, I bought myself a paperback.
Well, that's telling. That's telling.
Yeah.
All right.
And my honourable mentions were just another couple of Terry Pratchett's. I've been rereading a bit of Terry Pratchett this year. So my honourable mentions are Feet of Clay and The Fifth Elephant by Terry Pratchett. Good stuff.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Moving on to crime. I read 18 novels in the crime genre. My number five, Iron Lake by William Kent Kruger. I haven't talked about this on the podcast as yet. May well do when we come up for our first crime episode of the year. Mm-hmm. William Kent Kruger, I really, really liked his award-winning Ordinary Grace from a few years ago. And this is, Iron Lake is the first of his long-running series of crime novels that he's been writing since 1998. And I think he's up to about 14 or 15 or maybe even more. And it was pretty good. It was pretty good. It was a lot to do with the area that sits between the US and Canada and deals a lot with the local indigenous communities and the problems they have trying to find their way in the modern world and with the legal system. But I won't talk about that anymore. I'll talk about that time some other time. Number four, The Dark Remains by William McIlvaney and Ian Rankin. Ian Rankin went on to finish this first particular book by William McIlvaney. Well, it's the first in the series of his Inspector Laidlaw series of police procedures set in Glasgow in the 1970s. This was one that McIlvaney was writing, was going to be the first chronologically, although about the fourth or fifth written in the series overall, but the first chronologically, and in, he passed away before he could actually finish the book. And McIlvaney's family asked Rankin if he would complete it, and Rankin was over the moon about being given the opportunity to do so and jumped in, and it's absolutely fantastic. I really, really liked it. Number three, Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby. I've spoken about this one on the podcast. I really think that Cosby's a real good up-and-coming neo-Southern noir, if you want to put a tag on him. I think he's really excellent and he's somebody that needs to be watched and you'll need to keep an eye on him because although he's written three or four books, the books are already slated for film adaptations, so they'll be turning up fairly regularly over the next few years. Number two, B is for Burglar by Sue Grafton, the second, as you can tell by B is for Burglar, the second novel in Sue Grafton's long-running PI series, which is set in California in the mid-1980s. Quite excellent. And number one, Day's End by Gary Disher from 2022, one that I really enjoyed a lot and that we discussed at length on the podcast and really enjoyed it. So there was a nice mixture there. I didn't have any honourable mentions because, again, they drop away pretty quickly. I didn't have any more over 4.0s, but there's a fair mixture of subgenres here. Police procedurals, Iron Lake is really about an ex-cop in a small rural community. There's the PI of Sue Grafton and neo-noir books, the neo-noir stuff from Razorblade Tears. And there's authors from Australia, the United Kingdom and the USA, which this is the thing about looking at stuff, looking back over what you've read during the year, David.
Yeah.
And I guess this is what you do. You reflect on what you've actually seen or what sort of material you're reading. And you realise when you look at this, you think, okay, it's from Australia, UK and US. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, but what about the rest of the world? There's huge amounts of other stuff out there that I'm just basically not getting to and that I really need to start thinking about. And you don't have that really being given as a nudge to you unless you go back and look at what you've read throughout a whole of a year to see what it is that you're lacking. And I think that I need to look at a bit more European stuff, South American, African even. I've started on the Simeon Magre series and also I've just started the Camilleri Inspector Montalbano series of novels set in Italy. So they may well start creeping up in the list as I get into it because I quite enjoyed the first one of those that I read. And so I need to start spreading my wings a bit and looking at crime novels from other parts of the world rather than just Australia, the UK and the USA.
Fair enough, fair enough. But we have such good crime writers in Australia.
Well, we do, but you have to sort of wedge some of these others in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah, you do need to read stuff from elsewhere, I agree.
You need to be able to put things in perspective. I mean, you and I could sit here and we could just talk about, you know, Australian crime novels, and we could pretty much have a whole podcast about Australian crime novels and just keep reading all of those, because there's so many good, so many of them coming out, and so many of them are so good that you could fill an hour every couple of weeks just talking about these particular crime novels. But that's not what we're here for, really, in this instance. We could be. I know you'd like us to be, but I just feel...
Well, it's interesting looking at my list, which I'm about to give you. Every one of my top five was by an Australian author.
Really? Well, that'd be interesting. So it'd be interesting to see what that is. So I basically had one by an Australian author named Edisha. And as I said, there are two from the US and two from the UK.
Oh, well, yep. Okay. All right. So my number five, starting from the bottom, working up, is The Way It Is Now by Gary Disher. Not one of his best novels, but still pretty darn good because it was by Disher. That was good. The Unbelieved by Vicky Petraitis. Petraitis? P-E-T-R-A-I-T-I-S. Petraitis, I guess. So The Unbelieved by Vicky Petraitis. That was very good. It was about... It's a debut novel. I think she can get better. But this was really about how women's stories frequently disbelieved, particularly, you know, when they've been subject to sexual assault or violence. And so that's a very topical sort of thing. Similarly, Daughters of Eve by Nina D. Campbell, which is third on my list, is about some women taking into their own hands vengeance against men who've offended against them. Number two was Day's End by Gary Disher. Yes, we've talked about that quite a bit and liked it a lot, but it's only two on my list. And number one on my list was a debut novel called Wake by Shelley Burr, which I thought was excellent, certainly for a debut novel. And it's clever in the way it weaves together two different stories with a mystery in each one of them. It's a cold case story, and the guy who's investigating the cold case, you can't work out at first why he's so invested in trying to solve this case. And so there's that mystery, and that slowly unfolds during the course of the story. I thought it was really good, particularly, I say, for a debut novel.
Was that a 2022 novel?
It was. It should be up for the Kinnear Kellys.
Oh, okay. Well, I better get onto that before... all right. Yeah, another one to add to the to be read list.
Well, that's right. So all five of those were by Australian authors.
Oh, that's interesting.
A couple of honourable mentions: The Maid by Nita Prose, which won the Ned Kelly's International Award.
Yep.
And Lying Beside You by Michael Robotham. That's my honourable mentions for that.
Another Australian.
Yes.
All right. So this year we've decided that we're going to split out spies and thrillers from the crime category.
Yep.
I read four novels which I could plunk down into the spy and thriller categories. And again, I should probably get through to try and read more of these in future. So I've only got the top two with no honourable mentions at all here. My number two, Guns of Navarone by Alastair MacLean. I really like this book. I mean, I think this may well be a situation where the film is better than the book, because it deals with such big, wide vistas, and the storm as they come to the island, the climb up the cliff, the walk across the island, and then blowing up the guns at the end. I'm not giving any spoilers away because this was written in 1957, and if you haven't either read the book or seen the film by now, I'm sorry, I'm very disappointed in you. You need to have done both, because I think there's some really nice touches in the book, but they were changed. Some things were changed, and I actually think they were changed for the better in the film, oddly enough. And that's one of those really rare occasions where that happens.
Hmm.
My number one, The second in the series, Dead Lions by Mick Herron, the Slough House novels. This one was written in 2013. The second series has just been shown on Apple TV, I believe.
Yeah, I'm watching it. We're watching it at the moment.
All right, okay. So I'm going to have to get Apple TV and get a subscription or a one of those trial subscriptions and watch it really quickly and then drop it, as a lot of people have a tendency to do. But I think that the Slough House stuff is just wonderful. Really, really good books. And the TV series is really good as well.
Great
so
stuff.
I'll be attempting to read a couple more and slowly trying to catch up on that particular series over the next couple of years.
Okay.
And that's it. I'm done for Spy Thrillers.
Okay, I've got three. And the third one on my list is The Island by Adrian McKinty, which was a really good suspenseful thriller as this family tries to escape this sort of crime family on an island, stuck on this island. Number two on my list was Slow Horses by Mick Herron, the first in the series, the Slough House series, which was interesting to compare it because I saw the TV episodes first and then read the book. So it's always interesting to compare the differences. And there are a few, but not many. The TV sticks pretty close to the plot of the book. And number one on my list was Banjoworn by Josh Kemp, which won the best debut novel at the Nick Kelly's last year. And that was a cracker of a book. It's really all about drug addiction and the consequences, and particularly the consequences for the children of people who are addicted to drugs. And it's an interesting book. Very, very, very well done, I thought. Liked it. And no honourable mentions to that at all.
Okay. Yeah, well, I think we find that the debuts for some of the major crime and thriller awards really throw up some very, very interesting books. I mean, these are generally books that people have been working on for quite some time and have really honed right down to the nth degree before they get to be published. And some of them are really damn good indeed.
Mm.
It's a bit like the problem, but they, you know, such authors also have the same sort of problem as recording artists do, that the first album is fantastic because it's been taken out, all the songs have been taken out on the road and worked on and worked on and worked on for so long that they're really quite fantastic. But sometimes the second novel can be not quite as good, and then it seems that the third one starts getting back again to the level that you want, but the debut ones in particular are things to look out for.
Yeah,
in both the Ned Kelly's, Edgar's, all those major awards around the world, the first ones sometimes are damn good indeed. Mm.
Okay.
So I think we've moved away from crime, spy, thrillers now, and moving on to literary novels. These are
non-genre.
I was going to say, let's say non-genre. I call it literary just as a sort of cutback, but as a cut down name. But let's call it non-genre, shall we?
Yep.
I read 16 novels, which I would place into this particular category during the year. The number five, Travels with My Aunt by Graham Greene from 1969. A lot of people might remember this from the was it Maggie Smith in the film
of
this? It was, and that was made only a couple of years after the book came out, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, really, really lots of good fun. Some people have told me that the film, again, is better than the book, but I like this one. I mean, it might well have been one of Graham Greene's entertainments, but I don't care. I was entertained by it, and that was all I needed to worry about. Number four, The Ghostwriter by Philip Roth. I read this because I thought, well, I haven't read anything of Roth, and, you know, I really need to, not since way back when I read Portnoy's Complaint, 20, 30, 40 years ago, along with everybody else. But I thought it was about time I read it. I always thought this was great. I always really, really enjoyed this. I mean, you could basically look on this as being a sort of a fairly navel-gazing, pretentious literary novel written by an author about himself. But I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. Number three, Flames by Robbie Arnott. Mm-hmm. This is Robbie Arnott's first novel from 2018. And after you and I, David, had extolled the virtues of the Rain Heron last year, I decided the year before, so 2021, got to keep on going back to a year before, I decided in 2022 that I would catch up on Robbie Arnott's work. Especially as we were going to get to his third novel, which I'll also come to in a minute. So this is number three, Flames by Robbie Arnott, which second novel, fantastic. Number two, The Spare Room by Helen Garner from 2008. Helen Garner is one of these authors that divides people greatly. Some people absolutely love the work that she does, and some people think she's just bloody awful. I happen to be on the side that loves her work. I think there is a huge amount going on below the surface that you have to allow yourself the opportunity to have it flow over the top of you. And it takes a little while after you've read the book for you to realise, oh, that's what she was getting at. That's where things were going, and that's what was happening. Mm-hmm. And I like that about a novel that has got hidden depths that you only get to after you've given it a bit of thought a bit later. I gave that one 4.7, so it's very high for me. Mm-hmm. But I also gave my number one, Limber Lost by Robbie Arnott, 4.7.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one that we discussed extensively at the end of last year on the podcast. But you have to make a choice, don't you, the novels. And I liked Limber Lost just that little bit better than The Spare Room, although I gave it the same rating. So there we are. Honourable mentions, I gave only one, and that's The Housekeeper and the Professor by Yoko Ogawa, Japanese author. So this is a translation originally published in 2003. I like Yoko Ogawa's work. If you remember, I spoke about The Memory Police from a couple of years ago, which is a very... Yeah, it was a very strange, surrealistic novel, which I really greatly enjoyed and had it in my top five, I think. This one isn't quite as good and was written a little bit earlier, but I thought it was just a good, solid literary novel and told a good story and enjoyed it a lot. But post that, they all drop off fairly rapidly. So I don't know whether this is me getting a little bit more discerning or me being a bit harsher in terms of my ratings, David. Maybe it's a bit of both. And as I put more ratings onto things, I start honing my rating technique and start thinking, whoa, I didn't like this. This is going to drop off pretty rapidly and mark things down a lot more. Maybe that's what happens. I don't know. But it's... things just move a little, but that's okay. Things change over time.
Cool.
So that's mine. What about yours, David?
Okay. Well, it's interesting here how we decide what to put in what category, because there's at least two of these which could be in a different category. But that's okay. I'm going to call these non-genre.
That's quite.
So number five on my list was Flames by Robbie Arnott. We've got quite a bit of overlap, I think. So number five was Flames, which was great debut novel, which you could possibly call fantasy, but it's really more of a literary sort of work, I think.
Yeah.
Number four, this is also a book which could be considered to be crime because it features a murder, but this is The Secret History by Donna Tartt, which was terrific. Beautiful. Oh, gorgeous prose. And very, very interesting, very long book about... it's not really a mystery because you, right from the very start, you know that a crime was committed. You know actually who was killed and who did it, but it's all about what led up to that and about the consequences of that rippling through this group of young students. Great book, wonderful book. Number three was Cloud Cuckoo Land by Anthony Doerr, which you had in your SF section, but whatever. I saw it as a literary book, also very. Very interesting book. We've talked about it a fair bit on the podcast. Number two was All Our Shimmering Skies by Trent Dalton. He wrote Boy Swallows Universe. It was his debut novel, which is also terrific. Really good stuff. And number one on my list was same as yours, Limberlost by Robbie Arnott. So we agree on those. And my honourable mentions were The Lost Daughter by Elena Ferrante and My Brilliant Friend by Elena Ferrante. I must go on and get and read the rest of her Neapolitan novels.
Well, if you've started there, that you need to keep moving on,
keep going,
and reading them. Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Right, so our next category is novellas. Short novels, these are the ones that run from about 17,500 to 40,000 words. I read 18 of these during the year, which is a bit over what I expected to read, but that's okay. I read a lot in the science fiction and fantasy genres, but every now and again I pick up something that would be non-genre. There are a few of them around, though it is mainly these days a form and length that is more utilised inside the science fiction and fantasy genres. I wish actually more literary authors would write them. I think the novella is a really good length to ensure that the author stays tight and true to their initial concept and doesn't think, how can I add another 200 pages in this so that it makes it look like a big fat book that people will want to buy? I don't mind if it's a short, slim book, as long as the short, slim book is basically exactly the length that the story needs. And that's what you're after. So, and I think all of these did exactly that. Number five, Light Chaser by Peter F. Hamilton and Gareth Powell from 2021. That was very definitely a science fiction tale. Quite very interesting story indeed. Number four, A Spindle Splintered by Alex E. Harrow from 2021. That was one that you mentioned earlier on in your fantasy. And I believe her sequel to this has now been published or was published in the middle of last year, David. So I've found that one and I'm going to have to read that one as well because I would suggest that it's probably going to end up on the Hugo ballot as well.
Yeah, certainly.
Number three, Inside Man by K.J. Parker. I like K.J. Parker stuff, and this is a story about a demon that is basically manipulated by the church for them to be able to get the outcome that they want. Quite an interesting, different way of looking at demonology and demons and the way the church manipulates them as opposed to how demons can try and manipulate the church. Number two, Fugitive Telemetry by Martha Wells from 2021. This was a Murderbot novella that did not appear on any of the awards ballots because Martha Wells removed it from the ballot, even though it would have received quite enough nominations for both the Hugo and Nebula Awards for to appear there, but she decided that she didn't want to have it on the ballot for her own reasons, her choice. I really like these. I think they are, I just like the the tone. I just like the point of view character, and just like the way that it's all handled. But way out in front for me, and one that I haven't discussed on the podcast, I don't believe, way out in front. All those others, by the way, 2 to 5, all came in at 4.0, oddly enough, throughout the year. I kept on giving 4.0s to everything, but not to this one. This is The Visitor by Maeve Brennan from 2001. Now, this is a non-genre. It's a, for want of a better word term, a literary novella. Published in 2001, but written in the 1940s. It was written, or maybe, about the 1940s, when Maeve Brennan had moved from Ireland over to New York. And about the time that she started working for the New Yorker, she used to write the talk of the town, small pieces for them. But this is her one and only novella called The Visitor, which is stunningly good. And the reason why it was written in 1940 and not published until 2001 was that it was submitted to a publisher and for whatever reason, it just ended up in somebody's drawer and just stayed there and then ended up in an archive and then somebody found it in the university archive of that particular publisher's papers. Thought it was fantastic, and then published it. And it's about a woman who is a young Irish woman who's orphaned when her mother dies in Paris, and she has to go back to live with her father's mother, who really doesn't want her there anymore because the old woman was very disappointed in the fact that her son firstly got married at all, but then married this particular woman, and the son dies young, and so the old lady has just basically locked herself up in her house and just stays there, just about, and doesn't move. Mm. And I, oddly enough, I came across another book later on in the year, Great Granny Webster, which uses almost exactly the same idea of a woman visiting somebody locked up in an old woman. She was Scottish in this instance, locked up in the house and barely moving from the house at all. So it was quite odd that I came across two completely separate things like this. But this is a stunner. Yeah. I gave this one 4.6 and was by far and away the best novella I read all year. I gave an honourable mention to The Necessity of Stars by E. Catherine Tobler from 2021. So the genre novellas I have a tendency to read tend to be stuff that came out in the previous year because they all turn up onto the awards shortlist. But in this instance, my favourite was this one by Maeve Brennan called The Visitor.
Yep. Okay. Well, instead of novellas, because the novellas I've read, I've put in other categories. I'm going to talk about children's literature, which I always read a fair bit of. And so I'll start from my number five, which was The Explorer by Catherine Rundell. Kind of, these kids are little plane crashes in the Amazonian jungle, and they have to find their way out to safety from the Amazonian jungle. And they get a bit of help along the way, which is the plot of the story. Very, very clever little book. Number four was a classic, The Railway Children by E. Nesbitt. Everyone's heard of that or read that, I would imagine. Number three was a book that I was put onto by Lucy Sussex, a book called Deep Light by Frances Hardinge, which is interesting, very interesting concept. Number two on my list was The Girl Savage by Catherine Rundell. Again, another book by her. I bought a number of these books for my granddaughter, and I had to read them first, of course. But that was good. And the first on my list, top of my list for children's literature, was Metal Fish Falling Snow by Kath Moore, which is an Australian author. Great stuff. Very good stuff. So, what are we on to next?
All right, okay. My next category is in the single author collection or anthology category. I read 9 books which I'd place in this particular category, mostly because I'm reading old science fiction stories from the 1960s, not only for the Hugo Time Machine that we deal with on this particular podcast, but also as an interest for me in terms of something else that I'm working on. I gave a talk, wrote an article, big article about a recommended reading list of science fiction short stories for 1965, a year and a half or so ago, and then gave a Nova Mob speech about it last year. And I've lined myself up to give a Nova Mob speech about short SF in 1966. Esoteric title, if ever there was one, David. does anybody really care about short SF in 1966 other than me?
Well,
possibly. But anyway, that's the way it goes. Anyway, so my top five for collections and anthologies. And you'll see when I give the dates as to how this has all come about. My number five, Orbit 4, edited by Damon Knight, 1968. This was the fourth in his original anthology series. A number of stories of which came out of these onto the particular awards ballots, which is why I just decided to finish them off. And it's also because these are all paperbacks that I want to read and then donate off to somebody else. I generally, but firstly, give them off to my brother for him to have a bit of a look at. And if he doesn't want them, I say find a charity bin to give them to, because I really just don't want these anymore. And most of the short stories are read for the podcast. So, you know, once you've read half an anthology or half a short story collection by a single author, you might as well carry on and read the rest of them and finish the book off and see how it goes. Number four, All the Myriad Ways by Larry Niven, 1971. It's got a number of known space stories in it. Number three, The Last Defender of Camelot by Roger Zelazny from 1980. This collected some of the great stories that Zelazny wrote in the 1960s. He had probably one of the greatest starts to an SF career around. He basically hit the ground running with about 12 to 15 fantastic stories, and then started to fall off. But anyway, that's a story for another time, I think. But anyway, that was a Zelazny collection. Number two, the world's best science fiction fourth series, crikey, edited by Donald A. Wolheim and Terry Carr from 1968. This was the collection of what they said was the world's best SF from 1967. Shows you how esoteric we're getting here, but good short story collection. And number one, All the Sounds of Fear by Harlan Ellison from 1971. Mm-hmm. Ellison, like Zelazny, was one of the stalwarts of short SF in the 1960s. In fact, Ellison was probably best at the short story level, although he really was hit and miss. And when he hit, he was great, and when he missed, it was bloody awful. Yep. And it was about a 50-50 crapshoot, I reckon. This is sort of got some of the good ones in it and some that are just, you know, I didn't see what the point was. But anyway, they were my five. So as you can see, they range from 1968 as the earliest to 1980 as the latest. So I'm not really very much recent stuff in this particular genre or this particular category, David.
Okay, well, I don't... the only thing I've got in that category I've already talked about, which was the collection called Bliss Montage, which I've already talked about, so I won't talk about that again. I just thought I would throw in here, while I've got the moment, a bit of historical fiction. I usually read more historical fiction, but I only read one book during the year that fits into that category, and that was a book called Stone Sky, Gold Mountain by Miranda Riwoe. I'm not sure how you pronounce that, Riwoe, which was excellent. It was about a sister and brother who come to Australia in the gold digging era to try and make their fortune, to repair their family's fortunes. And the girl has to disguise herself as a boy because she's in this very rough environment. Good, very good book. Anyway, just that's the only one I've got on that list. So it's obviously the number one on that list.
Well, that sounds good, yes. Okay.
So what do we roll on to? I think we're on to non-fiction.
Non-fiction and then our overalls, I think. So non-fiction for me, another category in which I was woeful this year. I only read two, but both of which I liked quite a lot. Number two, Leave the Gun, Take the Cannoli by Mark Seal from 2021. Mm-hmm. This was a non-fiction account of the making of the film The Godfather by Francis Ford Coppola, depending on how you want to pronounce it. One of my all-time favourite films, and I was quite interested to see all the machinations that went on behind, or to read about all the machinations that went on behind the making of this particular film, how the studio basically tried to get rid of Coppola, didn't want Brando, didn't want... I mean, if you go back and look at who they wanted to have play some of these parts, you would think that... You know, Ronald Reagan as the Godfather? Come on. you know, it's just unbelievable some of the choices they were making. But you have to remember that by that stage in the early 1970s, Marlon Brando was so toxic in Hollywood that nobody wanted anything to do with him. But Coppola just basically just went out on a limb and said, without him, we're not making it. And that was it. And it was vindicated because, you know, he won a Best Actor award for it. And the film's an absolute dead set classic. So, and this is a very, very interesting account of the making of that particular film, and I'd recommend it. But my number one for the year, Mountains of the Mind by Robert McFarlane. This is McFarlane's debut book, and it's about modern humanity's obsession with mountains and climbing, because it is not a this is not a pastime that's been around for terribly long, and he basically traces it back to you know, that time when the Brits, for whatever reason, were starting to move into Europe a lot more and were into hiking and liking the outdoors, getting away, I suppose, from the big choking cities of London, Manchester and Liverpool, and wanting to go somewhere with a bit of clean open air. And they discovered Switzerland and the Alps in France, and before you know it, they were climbing these things. And then it just took off from there. And this is an amazing piece of work by a guy who is actually a mountaineer and whose grandfather gave him the love for the pastime. And it's just a wonderful piece of work. And I've been impressed with McFarlane's work. And I've got a number of others of his that I've got lined up to read. And I'll be looking forward to doing so. Like, it's one of these ones where I almost have to eke them out, David, one a year or so, just to make sure that I don't gorge myself too much on the goodies. Mm. Yes, that's right.
All right, I've got quite a few non-fictions, so I'm counting up from number five. Number five on my list is The Pitman's Requiem by Peter Crookson. And this has got a lot of personal interest to me because it's all about the miners in the county of Durham in England and their communities, and how those communities were really terribly broken up by Margaret Thatcher's government's very cruel policies towards the miners and the miners and the closures of those mines. Now, it's a personal interest because my father's family are from Durham. My father and his father, my grandfather, my uncles, all the way back were coal miners, and they went down the pits. And so that those communities are, you know, quite close to me from a personal point of view. So that was of great interest to me, but I think it would be of interest to other people too. Number four on my list is The Ninth Life of a Diamond Miner by Grace Tame. Very strange title, and she doesn't really, I think, really well explain in the preface to the book as to why she chose that title. But anyway, but it's really about, it's an autobiography. It's about her sexual abuse by a teacher at the age of 15. It's not an easy read by any means, but it's, I think, an important book for most Australians to read to see what her experience was. She's not a great writer, but and she goes all over the place, but there are reasons for that. And it's an important book, I think, and so I'm pleased that I read it. Number three on my list is Finding the Mother Tree by Suzanne Simard. And it's really an autobiography of a scientist who was very interested in how trees support each other in the forest and how they communicate through this underground network of fungi. And very interesting. It's just expressed like that. It sounds a bit like it's a greeny, cranky sort of book, but it's absolutely not. It's absolutely dead set science. Very interesting book. And number two on my list was Frostquake by Juliet Nicholson. I've talked about it on the podcast, about this very, very cold winter in England, which was one of the reasons that my family and Derek Ashby's family came to Australia. But it's also a picture of that era in England. And number one on my list is a great book, Midnight in Chernobyl by Adam Higginbotham. And it's a absolutely riveting account of the Chernobyl disaster, where this nuclear reactor went out of control and melted down, basically. And he's been able to access, when the Soviet Union collapsed, he was able to access a lot of records which had previously been unavailable. And there are, you know, he's managed to interview a lot of people and who were there on the spot. Very, very interesting. Very interesting stuff. So there we are. That's my nonfiction.
All right. Overall, David, so we get to the very end, the very last thing where we put all together and throw it all into the one big melting pot and pull out the numbers and see what we come up with. So, as I said, overall, I read 83 books in the year and I've got my top five, and they are Cloud Cuckoo Land by Anthony Dower, number four, Mountains of the Mind by Robert McFarlane, number three, The Visitor by Maeve Brennan, number two, The Spare Room by Helen Garner, and number one, Limberlost by Robbie Arnott. Now, I think it's a good mixture of novels, one novella and a work of non-fiction in that lot. And it's really easy for me to be able to recommend any of these. I gave the number five, I gave him 4.5 out of 5. And Limberlost, 4.7. So these would all come up as 5 stars for me. Hardly recommend the whole lot. Good idea to go out and have a look for them and read them. My honourable mentions, which just fell below 4.5, all three of these I gave 4.4 out of 5 to. And they are She Who Became the Sun by Shelley Parker Chan, Flames by Robbie Arnott, and The Ghostwriter by Philip Roth. So a good range of books there, some Australian, some not as well. So I'd be happy to put that list up for anybody to read, and then they can come and argue with me about them.
All right. Well, as I said at the outset today, I actually couldn't split really the top six, so I'm going to cheat and do six. The other thing to say about it is that. Other than the last two on the list, which are in the category of science fiction, all the rest are identical to my non-genre list. So there we go. So I'll go from six. I'm cheating a bit, but there you go. So number six was The High House by Jesse Greengrass. Number five was The City and the City by China Mieville. Number four was The Secret History by Donna Tartt. Number three was Cloud Cuckoo Land by Anthony Doerr. Number two was All Our Shimmering Skies by Trent Dalton. And number one was Limberlost by Robbie Arnott. But the order of those is almost arbitrary. Honestly, the top six were all very much very top for me. They were really, really good. Below that list, the honourable mentions might be Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel and Flames by Robbie Arnott. So there we go.
All right. Okay. So it sounds like we both had pretty good reading years. We found quite good books. Seems to be dominated by Robbie Arnott during the year. So yes. If he puts out another one this coming year, well, I think where we need to head.
We will get to that one. Yeah, for sure.
But anyway, we'll keep an eye out for him. And if the listener hasn't read anything by Robbie Arnott, well, then both of us could just recommend any of the three novels.
Absolutely.
To go and have a bit of a look at. And, you know, they're all three are wonderful, absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
He's a major new Australian talent, and you need to keep an eye on him because he's just going to keep on getting better and better, hopefully. He has done so far, so that's good.
Sure has, yeah.
Well, I reckon that's just about it, David, for the year. For this episode.
For this episode.
The books that we read last year.
Yeah,
we haven't finished up. We're not doing one podcast just this year. We will be coming back.
No, I've read two very good books so far this year. So.
I've read a couple of damn good ones already this year as well. So one of them bound to be on my one of my best lists of the year. And, I can tell you, right up front, the first book I read for the year was Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad.
Nice.
It's going to be hard to...
The horror.
Yeah. Mr. Kurtz, he dead. It is going to be hard for any novella of the year to knock that one off the top ranking already. It's going to have to be absolutely and utterly wonderful. It's probably one of the greatest short pieces of English literature around ever. Written in the late 1800s, just as it was, as the just as the 19th century was turning into the 20th, and it's just an astounding piece of work. Absolutely astounding. Anyway, so it's good that we're keeping up with reading some damn good stuff. But next episode, David, yes, I'll be talking about my best film and television of the year. And while you don't watch much film and television,
I watch hardly anything. It's not, I've got nothing to say.
Yeah, no, well, that's all right. I'll just talk amongst myself. That's all right.
You talk among yourself, and
I'll comment maybe. Yeah, that's right. You can comment every now and again,
and I'll talk about something completely different.
Yeah, that's right.
That's fine.
You're talking about something completely different, and we may also talk to a couple of other people about their best self. Not necessarily books, maybe something else as well for the year. And we'll see how we go with that. And,
indeed.
I might add an extra little piece in for the film and television. I might add my best live theatre performance. How about that?
Wow.
Well, I only went to one, so it was pretty bloody easy. but let me tell you, it was an absolute stunner. Okay. So I shall maybe talk about that one in the next episode as well.
See.
All right, David, I think we're about done then.
I think so.
All right, okay, so hopefully we got through it all. We had a few...
Yeah, we had a bit of trouble this time around with the internet connections, so we'll see how we go.
Yeah, but we'll see what happens, but hopefully that'll be good. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, David.
Thanks a lot, and I'll see you next time.
Yeah, see you then.